He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to this week's listenership of Car Keys with Jay and Robin. The cat is out of the bag. That's a headline related to Jaguar, which has been going steadily downhill, in my opinion, since 2000. Well, since they changed from the old characteristics, classic gold Jaguar look to the new modern look, which I never liked in its lineup of cars, starting with the XJ version, then down through the lineup. And now, for 2000, I don't know when it's going to be, the Jaguar, the owner of Jaguar and the design group has been trying to figure out how to redesign Jaguar yet again. And I know Jay hasn't had a chance really to look at them, but
I'm looking at them
now.
A bunch of pictures.
And I know these are preliminary, probably models that aren't street ready or even made into three-dimensional vehicles, but I am not impressed by the design visions that I'm looking at as we talk about this topic, and I hope none of them come to the U.S. in the way they're looking.
Windows
are small, which means visibility, even though you may have magic cameras, which you'll have to get used to using other than your eyes, is probably miserable, like in the Tesla truck, which is apparently the case, and other things about it. A lot of horizontal lines in the rear, and I don't know who's designing it, but I think they should be fired.
Well, here's the deal. I'm looking at these concept pictures right now.
Right.
And I don't know if that's what you're referring to.
That's probably what I'm referring to.
But they could have been designed by the guy who designed the Tesla truck.
Okay.
Here's the deal. I think you're right, Robin. Your XJ, which happens to be an XJR, was probably the last model that really looked like a classic Jaguar. And part of the Jaguar success, I think, with their luxury sedans anyway, was that the XJ really did not change, or from model to model, it really didn't change much over 20 or 30 or 40 years even.
Right.
And then yours, I think, is a 2004 or 5.
Correct.
And they changed the model in, 06 or 07 or 08. And the car that came out, I think, first of all, was absolutely the U.S. market was certainly not ready for it, because it looked like a hatchback, and that is something you can kind of sell in Europe and maybe in some parts of the world, but as a luxury car in the U.S., that was doomed for failure. I mean, it's easy to say in retrospect, and whether we personally like it or not, I do think that car was too far off the design of the model it follows, which is the one you have.
I agree with you completely on that.
But having said that, it's been 20 years now, or close to that, and since then, Jaguar has produced less and less models.
Right.
And they had come out with an SUV, which they still sell, which is the same vehicle as the Range Rover Velar. And arguably a better vehicle than the Range Rover Velar, although I think the Velar looks better. But again, that's personal taste. So the SUV is not bad, but it's you cannot build a brand based on one model, and you certainly cannot build a brand with your best-selling model being an SUV, and not having the icon or flagship of the brand be something that's really outstanding. And with the new XJ, or the current XJ, really the last XJ, they stopped production a couple of years ago, I believe. Jaguar's going downhill and people are forgetting about the brand.
They sure are.
And they have a new logo now, which is a logotype. It's great. It looks like a new graphic designer got brought into the on board. And they have a few designers at least producing, like you say, renderings of what could be the next car. So I'm going to be my usual pessimistic downer and say that that's it. Jaguar is dead.
Mine are pretty well extinct as far as numerically being visible on the road, which I love, because that means I'm about the only one, although I passed a duplicate of mine lately, a few days back, somewhere in the Northeast. And it stood out from the crowd of other cars coming that are all rounded, sloped, like hatchback looks and that kind of thing. But the new models that Jay has been referring to, they're up to 20 years old or about to be 20 years old, are not distinctive at all, and they show it in the lack of the number of vehicles that you see coming down the road being Jaguars of any of the, I think there were two or three models in that range, different sizes. So enough said.
No, not enough.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Jaguar also made the mistake of investing heavily in their sole electric vehicle model that, and it came out a little too early to go mainstream electric. The I-Pace, which is a sloopy-looking SUV, which was not a bad vehicle when it came out, just went nowhere.
Nowhere. I don't think I've actually seen one in our Northwest broadcast area that I could identify.
Now that you've gotten me on the rant of doom and gloom brands about to become obsolete, we can go on.
Go ahead.
Nissan is the other one. I mean,
well, I don't know that I think Nissan's really going to disappear, though. You've been saying this on a number of shows, recent shows, and you know, I actually like the Nissan pickup trucks looks. They're not selling very well, of course, because the news about Nissan is equally bad, and maybe you're the head banner on that front, Jay. I think the Rogue is not a bad vehicle.
In a recent show,
I talked about an Armada, which I drove, which I felt, unfortunately, was sort of tinny in its side doors, but it was still a very practical vehicle that I managed to get into without knowing it was when I was moving a daughter into college. And we had a lot of stuff to hold, and it was a perfect vehicle, and it drove well. But there aren't many of them around. Numerically,
you're making my point.
Yeah.
So you find Nissans in rental fleets, because that's probably where you got your
Armada. That was where we got it, in the rental fleet, exactly.
So and these brands survive like that. Mitsubishi survived for a while selling cars that were totally decent. Their mid-sized sedans, what are they called now? I used to like that car in the rental fleet.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the lineups.
And their SUVs, and you know, yes, they sold them to rental fleets, and then that's it. That's the end of the line. Next step is move over and disappear.
Okay.
And so you go on to the next group of cars.
Yeah, I want to know the next rant of disappearing vehicles that you think are disappearing.
Dodge.
Yes, I don't know that the Charger can make a Dodge vehicle.
An electric Dodge Challenger is just ridiculous. And an electric Dodge Challenger that is made to make crazy
noises,
outdoor noise with a subwoofer, is just ridiculous.
I can't wait to see and hear one on the road. And I think Dodge is so worried about that they are going to continue making the fossil fueled Charger into 2026 at least. And it's going to be interesting to see who wants to buy either of them, quite frankly, because the gas ones, as fast as they are, those are niche vehicles as far as my idea of consumer interest is concerned. First of all, they're expensive. Secondly, they are raucously inefficient in the gas models from the standpoint of fuel. Not that people who own them care about that if they can afford to buy them. But they are also impractical at so many other levels because of their high-performance capability. And they just don't make sense as being just a normal alternative passenger-style type of vehicle for anybody to buy at great numbers.
So, and if you keep going on with the Stellantis brands and it's the problem it's facing, well, as we know, Carlo Tavares resigned.
He walked away, which was smart.
He walked away, which, yeah, probably with a ton of money, but that's
the
point.
He knew nothing about the American market, in my opinion,
I don't think the problem is there. The problem was there way before Tavares got involved with the American market. And you look at now, the guy who ran Jeep's numbers down is now the head of Nissan. And they, at Ram Trucks, they rehired the guy who had taken his retirement. And the woman who was running the show there is now going to run Chrysler and Alfa Romeo in the U.S. Well, yeah. how many vehicles is that? The only vehicle Chrysler still makes is the rental minivan, and the only Alfa Romeos you see are few and far between, right, because they have only one or two models that are actually very good vehicles, but you cannot build a brand on one or two models.
Well,
and the dealers network in the U.S. is linked to this, Chrysler network, and they're just trying to save their, rears by trying to, bring sales back, Jeep sales back, and that's where they make their bread and butter.
That's where they make their bread and butter. And the Jeep vehicle line, to be fair, is an excellent line of vehicles.
They have two good vehicles. They have right now. They have one. No, they have two. They don't make the Jeep Cherokee right now.
That was a
mistake.
They
have a very good Grand Cherokee, and they have a very good Wagoneer. They're both high-end and big vehicles.
Right.
And again, the smaller vehicles are okay, but they're just Fiat rebadged product. They're
That's
okay.
Right. And I've talked about that on this earlier show, so we don't need to go back into those vehicles, because I actually did test drive one recently, the one that's built in Italy. And, Jay, I am coming up short with the name of it, but it actually drives very nicely. It's loaded with all sorts of tech. The price is very reasonable. I looked recently at list of incentives that were on some of the vehicles, and there was like a $7,000 incentive to sell this particular vehicle, albeit in the upper model range category. But that tells you that's a 2025. Oh, 2024s were up to $7,000, but were given up to $7,000 incentives by dealers to try to get them off the lots. And I recently talked to the dealer where I did the test drive, and he says they're having a very hard time moving these vehicles, and they're sitting on their lots. And this dealer had eight of them lined up, many of which I'd seen in an earlier visit, so I knew that they hadn't moved any of them. And the one in the showroom is still there that I saw over 6 or 8 weeks ago. So you're right. They've got a lineup problem that is not very interesting beyond, as you said, the Grand Wagoneers and what was the other one?
And the Grand Cherokee.
And the Grand Cherokees, right.
Yeah.
But they have the option. The trucks are very good, I think.
Yep, they are. I mean, the Ram
are very good for pickup.
Motor Trend just named the Ram 1500 the truck of the year.
Yeah,
for a bunch of good reasons.
But they have yet to catch up to GM and Ford in numerically at the year end of sales races. But they have made dents in their market, and I think they're very attractive. I have not driven a real new one lately, but they're probably just as good as the Ford and GM versions of their pickup trucks.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to the U.S. the electric situation, charger thing, which we, you and I were talking about, and you were suggesting we get somebody with experience in driving across the country in electric vehicle, and they're all very happy with that. I agree with you that the people who know about their cars the way those people do, don't have an issue with range anxiety and don't have an issue with potentially waiting 30 minutes to get their next charge level back up. What bothers me about the current situation with the electric chargers that are on the market is more about location. Numerically, they're increasing every month, but the locations of where they have to put these or where they are putting these chargers for the consumer to use when they arrive in an area where they need a charger bothers me a lot, mainly because the Tesla chargers, I know where there are three Tesla charging stations, two of which are quite a long walk away from where the people are probably going to shop in the shopping center areas that they are located, and one of which is pretty good, but it's only where there's a Dunkin' Donuts shop the main shop for consumers, no market or anything else. And now there's one at a local ski area, Jay. I just know Catamount has put in 8 units. They're not Teslas, but they're way over by the, and you know where the main water pond is for the snowmaking. They put them all over right next to the machine, the motor center, which pumps the water, over at the far end of the parking lot. And so here you come in your electric vehicle. You've got 4 people, 4 skis, and everything else. Okay, so you're going to say, oh, well, you drop them off, and then you go park the vehicle. Okay, so you do that, and then it's way over there where the pond is, and I can't wait for your comment. And so you go, the driver goes and parks and then walks all the way back to regain, join his skier group and get his skis. At the end of the day, he's got to reverse it.
I have 2 comments I can make.
And let's say there's a big bus that's electric. There's no place for a truck with a trailer to park or a bus, which isn't electric yet, but it will be.
I was just in Paris, and all the buses are electric, 100% electric.
Yeah. Where are they charging?
I at the bus depot, I guess. But let's get back to that in a second. I think charging stations, I remember when they came out, you know, at hotels you'd have them like they'd have
2 or 3
priority parking.
Right.
So what do? You make them priority parking? I think it's fine. If you have to walk 300 feet, so be it. I mean,
that's a good rant for that.
Life is all about choices. If you want an electric car and you want to charge it at the ski resort, that's where you're going to charge it. And it's still closer than the gas station.
Well, as you pointed out, though, there are now
honestly,
lines
I don't know,
forming
I don't
at
know.
The airports because there are so many Teslas that are being used for taxis and moving around. They should basically have an entire parking area lining up with chargers, maybe 50 or so, so that you don't have the waiting time, which you mentioned in a recent previous show that you saw when you were at the airports. That is welcome news for people, for the sales of electric vehicles, that there are that many vehicles out there on the road. But the charging station setup or locations has got to catch up in the intelligence department of where to actually put these chargers. And maybe not just put 6 in a corner. Maybe you put 2 in one corner, 2 in another corner, 2 or 3 in another place. But, of course, that creates wiring problems for the installer and the company.
Yeah.
And you can't. And then you've got to put the right output of the charger so you don't have to wait 24 hours to go 50 miles. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what the answer is to that.
Okay.
So
what's about France?
I'll start with what I saw in electric vehicles. And, you know, it was interesting. I drove from Brussels, Belgium, to Paris, and that's about a 320 kilometers. So it's about 200 miles. I'm going to say, take a round number. Mm-hmm. 200 miles, 3 hours time plus traffic. Drove in on a Sunday, drove out this morning. First of all, charging stations for electric vehicles on the highway, yes, they are kind of conveniently located, but yes, they are more distant from the amenities, whether restrooms or restaurants and stores on the highway than the gas station proper is. So, yeah, there may be second-class citizens. But I also noticed there was not a car charging when I went by. And I only noticed one, to be honest. So the reality is Europe is putting more and more charging stations like we do in the U.S. And what was interesting in Paris is, yes, you see a bunch of electric buses. I doubt all of the electric buses, all the buses are electric, but Oh, yeah. And they're fully electric.
Well, they were in Amsterdam also.
Okay, so who makes them? Is it BYD from China, or are there European manufacturers who are making buses? I don't know. And I will look into this. But back to, you know, the overall world market of electric vehicles, that's where BYD has a big leg up on Tesla, is that they sell about the same number of cars, if not a few more nowadays, but they also have all the industrial market that they've pretty much cornered, at least to this point.
You're talking about being in China, though, with BYD. Do you see a lot of BYD vehicles in France?
I don't know.
You probably wouldn't notice them driving. It's hard to notice when you're driving along at, 100 kilometers an hour to see.
Yeah, I don't know about the buses.
They're not very visually noticeable.
I have not necessarily seen any Chinese vehicle. Yeah. I may have seen one, and I forget the brand, to be quite honest.
Amsterdam had a showroom of Chinese cars, and I can't remember the brands either, and they were strikingly beautiful. When I was there, there was nobody but me in the showroom and a couple of salespeople. So they, you could see them walking on the streets. You could see them through the windows, but I don't know whether they're making great inroads yet. The prices are certainly advantageous over the American pricing or the Tesla pricing situation, equivalent model for model. And that's what, of course, the Americans and probably Europeans are worried about in letting them in without putting extensive tariffs on them to try to protect our industry in this country, as well as the Europeans trying to protect their industry.
That's another
comment which we don't need to belabor our listeners on this show with, I don't think.
Back to driving in Paris and actually riding quite a bit in different Ubers, just not to have to drive and park in Paris itself. I noticed this hype taxi company,
right,
if you want to call them taxis. And hype is, I don't even know if they exist in the U.S. or not. But basically, I asked my Uber driver, and he was like, oh, yeah, this is hydrogen vehicles only.
Wow.
So hype, and I don't know, I mean, literally, this was last night, and they're using, what I saw was a Toyota
vehicle,
hydrogen vehicle.
Okay.
And that's a whole other world to explore, but it's interesting to see, and I look into that a little bit, that this one company is using it to,
demonstrate something.
Yeah, and I guess there's a business model, and maybe hydrogen vehicles work well within the confines of a city and fleet management. I don't know.
You have certainly with the hydrogen, and what little I know about it here, there's been for about 8 or 9 years discussion of trying to get into the hydrogen powering of vehicles. There are no. Hydrogen stations to speak of in the Northeast, as far as I know. So you talk about problems with limited electric charging stations. Hydrogen stations are virtually non-existent, so I don't think it's going anywhere fast in this country. Can we go to scooters, Jay?
I want to talk a little bit more. I don't care too much about scooters because the fewer the scooters, the better, in my opinion.
Well, I have one, so I have some
first-hand
experience, and we're running out of time. Watch your timer.
I do want to talk about driving through traffic with real cars.
Good, okay.
Four real cars. And so I was on what the Parisians call the périphérique, which is the loop around Paris. I've been driving on and off for the last 40 years. And historically, it's been a nightmare to drive because you either it's crazily congested or people are driving like madmen. And there are all sorts of speed records around that loop of Paris. Well,
like the Nuremberg speed records, you mean?
Yep, yep. There are camera controlled. Now everything is camera controlled. Big Brother is watching. Scanners. And the speed limit is 50 Ks, which is exactly 30 miles an hour, very, very close to 30 miles an hour. And guess what? All four or five lanes move at 30 miles an hour, and it is extremely easy to navigate. And people are just following each other. Everybody's relaxed. There's no trying to cut the other guy in front, and you just go about your way, and nobody's going an inch or half a mile an hour faster than 30 miles an hour.
Well, they can't because they can't pass, right?
And right.
It's like a moving parking lot.
It's a moving parking lot, but everybody's relaxed and everybody's just moving along.
So there's no such thing as a cruising lane, a passing lane.
Nope.
No. Nope.
Well, they're all lanes, and it, you know, we're talking suburban areas, but
so they basically stall the speeders.
You just bring traffic to a crawl, but it moves, and
okay.
Everybody behaves, and there's no road rash, no anger, it's just safety is
great.
Greatly
improved. Didn't bother you at all, right?
Not at all.
Okay, so you weren't in a hurry to get somebody somewhere, and you weren't a cowboy.
Even if I was, there's
show.
Nothing I could do about it. No, I did
nothing
not.
Nothing you could do just... about it. Interesting.
So,
God forbid that
is...
would be on 684 or the Mass Pike. You need more than two lanes or three lanes to probably have that kind of thing work. I don't know. You can comment in a minute, Jay, but I want to tell you and all listeners, Connecticut is apparently trying to pass a law to stop these madmen speeders that are going by in their Chargers and their high-powered cars. I don't know how they're going to stem the tide of those because there are not enough state troopers that I can see, at least in marked vehicles, on any of our Connecticut roads to find anybody. And, of course, I've been ranting about the people who are driving with no headlights on at dusk or no front headlights on or lighting systems on. Because you cannot see them when they're in a row of cars with headlights behind them, and they're dark gray. And
Okay. Get back to the point of the speeding vehicles.
Yep. The point of speeding vehicles is they're going to try to stop the speeding vehicles. I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know whether they're going to get chargers or unmarked vehicles or what, or drones maybe. I just don't know how they're going to do it because those guys go through you, as you've seen, like a slalom course on a ski hill, and they're going 90 miles an hour.
It's actually really easy. They've done
it
here.
It is easy to do it.
It's easy.
You're right.
I'm not saying I have a conflict here with my you know.
Yep.
You know, I like to drive fast. Speed cameras are an invasion of privacy. But then again, we have so many other greater risks or threats to our privacy.
Correct.
Than cameras filming our license plates and troopers can do that anyway. They can have their scanners on cars.
They do
so
that
you have them
for
on
registration.
Cars, yes.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. So might as well just put them be fixed. You put a battery of scanners here, and then 10 miles down on 684, and you bring the
coming.
Speed down.
Well, they've been talking about that in the Mass Pike for decades about whether or not if you went through the toll booth and where your times were. They could ticket you for excess speeding on the Mass Pike, and then of course that got to be a very political argument, and they never did add that particular feature to the timestamps on the
and on the Easy Pass. They can do it on the Easy Pass. It'd be
right.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Am I advocating that?
I don't know, Jay. You're sounding like it.
No, I don't. What do we want? I mean,
with that
French
discussion
fast?
Of five lanes going 40 miles an hour, you didn't have a problem with it. It sounds like Jay DeMarkin might be going to...
Jay DeMarkin's getting old. I don't know
Jay DeMarkin's getting old, right. Okay. Are we out of time yet, Mike?
But what we can also say, you were talking about scooters, just a quick note of scooters. They have banned scooters in Paris. That's it. Done. No more scooters.
Very interesting. Because they're dangerous, right? Or they clog the road.
And I just saw another blurb of news, 47 people killed in New York City on scooters in the last 5 years.
47, that's not very many.
Yeah, think of all the broken bones and
well, that's
you know,
true, Jay. I have a scooter for our listeners to hear, and it goes comfortably 30 miles an hour. I do not need a scooter license. But I do need to stay on the side of the road, and these narrow two-lane roads where I have my scooter are not really wide enough for cars coming both directions to pass me safely or for me to be on that scooter. And I'm always looking over my shoulder. I do have rearview mirrors on it, but it worries me when cars are coming at me in the opposite lane and cars are coming up behind me.
And with that being said, we've got to scoot on out of here.
Okay, maybe more on the in a future show.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.